We Schroots don't need some Harvard doctor to tell us who's alive and who's dead. But there was an unlucky streak of burying some heavy sleepers, and when grave robbers discovered some scratch marks on the inside of some of the coffins, we decided to make sure that our dead were completely dead. Out of kindness.
That's it for me.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into all the draft talk, all the offseason talk, and introduce our special guest, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN, follow Weiss at NYG Daily, and follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Hit the subscribe button, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a very kind review. That being said, let's jump into it. We'd like to welcome our special guest, Jordan Ronan, ESPN, Giants beat writer. Jordan, thank you for putting a shirt on, and thank you for taking the time to come on the show.
Yeah, you know, you told me this is audio, but we said we're going to do it by Skype. So last second, I was like, oh, man, I can't come here looking like a schlub. I got to at least put on a polo shirt to look semi-reasonable. Because I was sitting there, you know, the workout clothes.
Oh, yeah.
Guns half hanging out. I didn't want to intimidate anybody on this podcast, but no, I appreciate you guys having me on. You guys are definitely entertaining to follow on social media.
That's a kind way of putting
somebody
it.
Somebody who, you know, has to be careful what they say and what they write. Sometimes it's funny because I see you write things that I wish I could say and do things I wish I could do, but you know.
Well, that's what we're here for.
You got to work with what you got.
Exactly. That's the purpose we serve here. But we appreciate the time.
Well, hold on a second. I got a bone to pick with Jordan for a second, okay?
Okay, so already we're 1 minute in.
I know.
We're 1 minute 35 seconds in and we're beefing
already. I got to get out of the way. So for the past couple of years, we'll say 3-4 years, the Giants have had some really bad drafts, right?
Yeah.
And people got fired.
Yep.
Well, I blame you for some of that.
GM Why? Jordan.
Because every February and March, you put out an article and you basically have the Giants draft board.
Every time
that happens, they get jumped over for a player, whether it's Leonard Floyd or Jake Conklin or Brandon Sheriff or whoever, and they end up, you know, stuck.
I was plugged in for a while, but as things went along, and especially that Evan Ingram year, it turned out I was out of the loop. So it became less as we went along here. So if you're going to blame me, I guess you should be in better shape than 3 or 4 years ago.
There we go. Well,
so I'm giving you, see, look at this. This is an optimistic. Nobody expected the three of us to sit down together and come out with an optimistic Giants podcast at this point, right?
Look, exactly.
Right now.
Exactly. Well, we'll get into it because, Jordan, I saw your I saw this by accident because I rarely use Facebook anymore. And then I went on today and I saw that I follow your page. And then Weiss and I have been texting. And apparently I've got the Giants finishing it at a way better record based strictly on the schedule. No idea what else is going to happen in the draft and, you know, for other teams as well. But we'll get into that later. But this is certainly a more optimistic start to the podcast than I think anyone was expecting, especially this guy Joe, who called us all hacks on Twitter. So, wow. You know, that's refreshing. You get those from time to time, I'm sure.
Yeah, welcome to my world. That's like, well,
that's the nicest thing someone has said to Jordan in a long time. Yeah.
Hack. I can take hack. That's nothing.
Yeah, hack's nothing. Let's start with that since Weiss brought up, you know, you being plugged in. We spoke about this last week. We had Will Brinson on the show, I guess 2 weeks ago at this point, Weiss, wasn't it? Was it last week or 2 weeks ago?
Will's good, dude.
Will's a great guy. One of our better episodes, hoping you could top it. But Will being a Carolina guy and sort of being plugged in a little bit down there, a lot of the stuff we spoke about, or at least a nice chunk of the podcast, was about essentially Gettleman tipping his hand or the lack of smoke screens within the organization and how sort of everyone knows what they're going to do. You sort of had that scoop, you know, for a few years. You just said you're not as plugged in right now, but what is your opinion on that in terms of the Giants' inability to, I guess, both maneuver as well as sort of keep things in-house?
You know, I mean, I think it's overrated. You know, I may say something. People, there's so many people out there saying so many different things that people don't even know what to believe, to be honest with you. So, you know, I'm out here on the streets saying I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback at six. And Ian Rappaport came out earlier today and said something about the possibility of them draft, the people around the league thinking about their drafting someone at six. So there's so many things out there that I honestly think that the whole smokescreen stuff is overrated. And to be honest with you, you hear how people say it's lying season, right?
Yep.
And I don't really get that as much. That doesn't really resonate with me, because the way at least it works for me is, you know, I have sources, and these are mostly people that I'm, like, friendly with over the years. I became friendly with over the years. I don't talk to my friends and hope that they're lying to me. The way that it works to me, at least, is if somebody really wants to keep something and wants to tell me something, but they don't, you know, they don't want it out there at all in any way, shape, or form, and they tell me, look, you can't say anything. You know, just don't, this is just for background. You can't really use this. Like, so to me, the whole lying thing, I don't get it. Like, why would you be friends with someone who's just going to flat out just lie to you? And then you just go back and you have a normal conversation the next day.
Right. Well, to your point.
Weird. I get agents. You talk to certain agents and you know that some of the stuff they're telling you might not be the truth. But then I don't report that stuff as fact.
Right. So
it's very weird concept to me.
Definitely. So to your point, obviously, you know, if you're friendly with those people, there might be some others out there who have, I'll call them not vague sources, but people with connections to the organization. I mean, these teams are putting out misinformation in hopes of, you know, misleading certain teams and getting that upper hand in the draft, no?
A little bit, I guess, because I hear some people, and Greg Gabriel's a guy who's a former front office guy, and he's insisted everybody's telling lies. I mean, but I don't know. I'm just hoping the people that I'm friendly with and that I actually speak to aren't really telling me lies. They're not telling me what their direct plans are. I mean, that's sort of the way that it works behind the scenes, at least for me. I can't speak for anybody else, but I talk to people and they give me ideas of what they think of players. They're not going to tell me exactly what their team is doing. Nobody really does that, right? But you get an idea of which players maybe they like, or which players certain people around the league think are high on, and you put it all together and you're making guesstimates, right? Nobody knows for sure in the draft what anybody's doing. You're basically just following the tea leaves based off all the information you get. And I guess the better information you get, the closer you are to the actual truth.
Fair enough.
So I guess my question to you, Jordan, is this, and I'm just going to flat out ask it.
Yeah.
Does it make sense to pass on a quarterback at 6 and take him at 17? Because that's what seems to be what everyone is saying right now, is that there's going to be no quarterback worthy of the 6th pick, but 17, oh, yeah, there could be somebody there they like. Does that make sense?
To me, it makes zero sense.
I'm trying to figure that out.
I don't get it. I mean, I'm with you. If you're like a quarterback, you should be all in on the quarterback. It's the most important position. Just take your darn quarterback.
Yep.
Don't take a risk of not getting that quarterback. Now, the Giants are going to view this differently, all right? And this is my take on the situation right now. And I listened to Dave Gettleman today. We're taping this, Thursday night?
Yep.
So I listened to Dave Gettleman earlier tonight. I came away from that sort of reinforced of what I had already thought, is that their intent on staying to their board, right? And if their board doesn't have a quarterback in that top 6, and that's, you know, one of the guys in their top 5 or 6 are available, they're going to draft that guy. And if they get to 17, or even, you know, they decide to trade up from 17 a little bit, which I think might be a possibility, and that quarterback is there, they have a, you know, Daniel Jones or Drew Locke, who I think are the two guys that they would be most likely to target at this point, and they're sitting there at, I don't know, 11, 12, 9, 13, I'm making up numbers out of the blue right now, and that's around the range that they have him on their board, then they would do it. Now, do I think that's the right way to go? No. But I also do think that the trade of Odell Beckham, right, one thing that it did accomplish for them, we might not view this as a great thing, but it bought them more time to get the quarterback in a way. Because you now don't have to worry about being good before Odell is starting to get up there, and you're wasting away him in Saquon's prime, right? If they need to defer it and push it back to next year, it's a little more palatable now from their standpoint.
Well, the issue with that is
does that make your head want to explode? Does that make your head want to explode?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've been following. You understand how we feel.
I'm about to break this microphone over my head. I don't know how to respond to that.
Well, let me ask you this then.
How about this? Would you guys be apoplectic if they decide to pass on a quarterback altogether this year? Or could you stomach that?
Because
I think it's a possibility.
No, I don't think I could.
I'm like this. I'm like, if you pass on him at six, then don't take a quarterback. That's fine. You don't like any of the quarterbacks. It's not a strong class, whatever. But to then turn around and take one at 17, it's like, what?
Well, especially the long-winded answer to your question for me is I look at the schedule, and I seem to be more optimistic than most. I think they've got one of the easier schedules in the league. You look in the division, maybe they can steal one from the Cowboys. The Redskins don't have a quarterback. You know, Jameis's first year with a new coach, and
they're going to be underdogs likely in that Tampa game, though.
And that's fine. I actually have them losing that one because I think any team that's going to air it out like I expect the Bucs to, they could get behind, and they just don't have the firepower to come back. But if they win, call it seven games, right? You had them at 6-10. If they win seven games, they're drafting, I don't know, where are they drafting? 12, 13, around that range, right?
Maybe even lower, yeah.
Higher, exactly. So you're basically going to go 7-9 without a future quarterback in place, and then they're going to mortgage their future for Justin Herbert, and I'm going to jump off the GW bridge.
Well, here's the deal. Ready? If they get to 17 this year, or in that mid, you know, whatever that is, when they get around there, the teams, they have to make a decision. If they don't draft a quarterback at six, right? They have to, at that point, either say, we're going to get a quarterback now, but if we don't, they need to start collecting draft capital for next year.
Yes.
So that's a decision they have to make on draft day. Because like you said, if they go 7-9, they're not going to have a top pick. They're going to need draft capital to be able to do that and move up. So this way you don't have to completely mortgage the future, like you said.
Fair enough.
You can kind of do that in a reasonable way. So that decision is going to have to be made within the next week.
Fair enough.
How they're going to do that. If they decide to defer that quarterback decision, then they need to start collecting picks.
Now, they've got a buttload of mid-round picks. I feel like no one's really, I mean, maybe a few people are, but I feel like an underrated move would be they pass on one at six, use some of these picks to move up from 17 to 12. And if they like Daniel Jones, which I don't, or if Haskins slides for whatever reason, I don't think he will, maybe Drew Lock, but trading up this year from 17 to get one.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's why they have all this draft capital. But if they're not going to use it this year, they better roll it over in some way, shape, or form.
What about moving down from six? I think that could get them more, right, than 17?
Yeah, you know what? Moving down is hard, though. It's really hard when there's not those quarterbacks that people
like want. Last year where they should have traded down.
Yes.
Like last year, the idea that Gettleman wouldn't even answer the phone boggles my mind.
Yes.
That's the one thing. That was the first head scratching moment where you're like, really?
He should be thrown in jail for that.
That's just bad business.
Oh yeah,
he should be thrown in jail. That's a crime. That's a crime in 45 states in America.
It's a way of doing business. It's actually a fireable offense. The fact that you're going to be that close-minded. What if somebody wanted to trade them for a first-round pick?
Yeah.
What if somebody wanted to do that?
The Jets moved up. The Jets moved up what? Three spots, and they got two second-rounders for it.
Yeah, I think it was the year before, also, or 2 years before, where the Niners and Bears traded right. Mm-hmm. They from two to three.
Yeah.
One spot, and the Niners got, I don't remember exactly off the top of my head what the ball was, but it was pretty. It was pretty nice to move down one spot when they weren't going to take Mitch Trubisky anyway.
Right, exactly. So, it's very frustrating.
That's my biggest complaint about Dave Gettleman, not the moves. I can sit there and nitpick the Odell decision of signing him and then going and trading him the next year. But, you know, I could understand what most of the moves were about. I have a problem with the way that they've conducted business.
It's his lack of understanding or unwillingness to accept that there is value at certain picks right? He spoke about the hot dog and the pretzel and this and that. And, right? The infamous quote and mocking analytics and not believing in positional value. Well, buddy, positional value exists, Dave. I mean, come on.
Yeah, positional value. You're talking about maximizing the return on if you're going to let Landon Collins go, making the decision, which should have been easy, to rebuild it last year when everything was set up. I mean, if you pick a point, if you pick a situation where you need to rebuild, they're coming off 3-13 with a 37-year-old quarterback, with a new coach, a new GM, and the number two overall pick. I mean, that spell, that just shouts rebuild to anybody and everybody.
Yep.
If you just strip away everything like that, that's what it should have been, the easiest decision for this organization to do.
Well, not to beat a dead horse, and Weiss, I might be taking the words right out of your mouth right now, but what do you buy into the theory at all that Gettleman is maybe not jealous, but upset that he missed out on the opportunity the first time around when Jerry Reese got the job to build with Eli, and this is his final chance, and he doesn't really care if it doesn't work out because he'll just leave, and that's going to be the end of his football career?
You're asking me or what?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm putting you on the spot.
I don't think so. I really don't.
Okay.
I don't think that's the case. I think maybe ownership probably wanted that to be the case also. I'm not saying they mandated it, but they preferred it to be that, to go in that direction. Right? So, you know, and everyone was on board, okay, why not? Let's try it. What's the downside? And they didn't realize that the downside is they put the organization in significantly worse shape than they even were before. And then they had to start stripping it down and try to rebuild it in the middle. They wasted a year, and now who knows? Here's the problem. If you're going to rebuild with a new quarterback at some point, the point of getting a new quarterback should have been like 2 or 3 years ago, right? So this isn't even on Gettleman. The point, it's probably on ownership. You want to get that quarterback before you get to the point where you are desperate for a quarterback, okay? So if they did it 2 or 3 years ago, the guy could have sat until whenever they were ready. And if he wasn't the guy and he ended up being a dud, because these guys are, you're like a 50-50 chance if you hit on the quarterback.
Yep.
Right? Even in the first round.
Yeah.
So if, even if you miss, then you could get that other guy around this year and next year and not have to go through this prolonged search for quarterbacks, which is what the bad teams do.
Right.
Right? If the Giants miss on their quarterback now, this year or next year, you're, before you know it, it's going to be a decade plus, a dozen years plus of bad football before they turn it around. And the next thing you know, I mean, he talks about quarterback health. They were in it when he, during that time.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's why you really want to get ahead of it. The Patriots are great at getting ahead of these kind of things. And they tried with Garoppolo, and Tom Brady just happened to outlast the succession.
Right. That's true.
Because he's Tom Brady.
Well, let me ask you this, Jordan. We talked about the Beckham trade. Do you think Cleveland last year would have given up number 4 for Beckham straight up?
At the time, I don't think Cleveland was in the position to do that. They were still in rebuild mode themselves. So I don't, I would be surprised if they were in the position to do that at that time.
Fair enough.
I don't know. I don't know that, though. I know that they never really seriously, you know, made a big time offer. Like, you know, it's out there that the Giants were looking for 2 first-round picks around the owners' meetings of last year. You know, remember when that originally came out, they were kind of shopping them a little bit. And, the Browns had their opportunity to step up, and they didn't. They didn't really jump in there. So I would doubt it.
That's fair. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit. I have been known to place a bet or two, make a wager or two, and one of the wagers that I made – was Quinnen Williams to be the first overall pick at +2,000. I'm curious
in the draft.
I'm curious on your opinion on the Josh Rosen situation and whether or not you think they're actually going to take Kyler Murray. I obviously, based on that wager, do not believe that to be the case, or I think that there's a way better chance of them keeping Josh Rosen than the odds indicate, because I don't think Cliff takes that job unless he's confident he can win with Josh Rosen. And I said it a couple weeks ago. I think Quinnen Williams.
Really? You really? Wait, Cliff Kingsbury had all these options. He had all this leverage. Right. He's going to be picky about which NFL job he takes?
Well, listen, maybe he decides.
He was an offensive coordinator at USC.
Yeah, well, okay. then he goes back to USC, or maybe someone else offers him a job. Coaches, right? He's not gonna put himself in a failing situation.
USC NFL head coach. You know where the gap. You know where the gap is between those two.
That's fine, but listen, he's a young guy, right? Like this isn't like he's a 50-year-old guy who's never gonna get the opportunity again. He's a hot young offensive mind, and teams really really like that. And if at the end of the day he goes, all right, well, you know what, I'm not too sure about this. Yeah, there's a chance he could say no, but like. You know, for a guy like Pat Shurmur, who took some bad jobs and made the most of it and then gets fired and then has to work his way back up, I don't know. All I'm saying is I don't think you take the job unless you're confident in your ability to work with Josh Rosen. And I do believe Quinnen Williams is by far the best prospect in the draft. What do you think of the Josh Rosen situation?
I think that everything you hear around the league and from everybody, people that are close to the Cardinals, people that are close to Kyler Murray, it just sounds like he's going number one to the Cardinals.
Okay.
That is just the deal. And even if he didn't go number one, right, I think the only situation, and this is something I've heard from people, it's kind of been whispered around the league a little bit. If he didn't go number one to Arizona, it would be because Arizona
traded out.
Got traded that. And if Arizona's trading that and they're getting a haul for that, it's because someone else is coming up and drafting Kyler Murray. I would be hard pressed to imagine somebody else paying a premium, trading up to one, and drafting an interior defensive lineman.
That's fair, but at the same time, if Arizona is actually considering, you know, these trade backs, then that team has to know that they're pretty serious about sticking with Josh Rosen and lose a little bit of leverage there, where that team could call up, you know, the 49ers or the Jets and be like, hey, let me try to sneak up to two or three for less, and knowing that they're not too serious about keeping taking Kyler Murray.
It sounds like you're trying to convince yourself.
Oh, I am. I am. Well, Jordan, welcome to the spin zone.
Wait, hold on. You told me before positional value exists.
Yes.
Don't you find it hard to believe it? And I interior pass rusher is an important position. But are you really willing to spend the number one pick and resources and using that resource and that premium pick on that position, or would you at least rather be edge rusher?
That's fair. I mean, listen,
it's hard for me to imagine. And I love Quinnen Williams, great prospect. Yeah. Everyone I talk to loves the guy.
That's fair. I mean, that is very likely what is going to happen. But I just think that if 2 and 3 already have their quarterbacks in place, Gruden sort of a wild card at 4, I guess. I mean, people are saying that if Murray fell, he'd bite. If the Cardinals are even considering, you know, like Dave Gettleman says, you make the first call, you lose leverage, right? Come on, that's how it works.
I'm hoping the Cardinals are making the first call if they're really trying to trade that pick.
Yeah.
God, I hope they are. Or if they're trying to trade Josh Rosen, I hope to God they're calling around to see what they can get for him.
So where's your landing spot prediction?
For Kyler Murray?
No, for Rosen.
Oh, for Rosen?
Yeah. Oof,
that's a tough one, man.
Yeah.
This is a tough one. It really doesn't seem like there's a much of a market out there for him, to be quite honest with you. Which is surprising.
I think that's
going to
be part
now.
Of the problem.
Now, one would emerge. I wouldn't be surprised that one would emerge. To me, the Redskins still make the most sense to me.
Okay.
Or maybe the Patriots. That's just the Patriots type of move.
Right.
You know. We'll just seize this opportunity. Cheap. The price is cheaper than we thought. The Chargers also are another one. I wouldn't be surprised to see them do it if the price is in like the second round, say, and the Chargers can get it, because those are teams where they can then take Rosen, pay him squat,
right?
Have him sit there, and then they can evaluate whether they think he's the real deal or not. And if he's not, it's not the end of the world.
But they don't have to
throw him in there.
Yeah.
They have time.
And that's true. But also, at the end of the day, if Brady plays, call it 2 more seasons, I mean, this guy's a machine. He could go even more. Josh Rosen, let's say he's playing that fourth or fifth year of his contract, and, you know, he's good, but he's not blowing you away. You can get that extension at a pretty good price.
Yeah, well, because he didn't play.
That's what I'm saying. If you expect Brady.
For sure.
That's what it makes sense. If you
it makes sense. Yeah. And you would know by then if your guy's with you that long and you played in preseason and practice every day and scrimmages, you would be able to tell if he's legit or not.
I think,
honestly, I'm a big believer in this, that if you don't have a quarterback in this league, you should go get a quarterback basically in the first round until you get one, either every year or almost every other year at the minimum.
That's
because the price isn't exorbitant like it used to be, where you have to pay the guy a gazillion dollars.
Right. That's actually
a valuable pick. But
you know Gary Vaynerchuk, obviously?
Yeah.
That's his theory with the Jets. For years, he was just like, use every pick on a quarterback until you hit, and then you build.
If you don't have one, you have zero chance.
Exactly. Exactly.
Zero. I mean, you literally have no chance unless you have an all-time great defense. There's two ways to win in the league. All-time great defense, or you have a stud quarterback.
Even if you have that all-time great defense, you need a quarterback that's cerebral enough to be strategic on offense.
Yeah, I don't even think all-time great defense theory works anymore. Not today's NFL.
I mean, it worked for the Broncos, though.
That's what I'm saying. Manning, need a cerebral quarterback.
Peyton Manning was shot. He couldn't even throw. But
you
need a defense that's that good. I mean, they were that good that year.
Well, wouldn't it make sense, speaking of Josh Rosen, for a team with a 38-year-old quarterback who has 12 picks in the draft to potentially trade for Josh Rosen?
Yeah, that would make sense to me. I think it would be a good move because, like we said, it's not going to be that costly.
In the
price of it, monetarily, yes, but, and I've reported this already, my interpretation of it is that the Giants aren't in love with him, right? Maybe they had some sort of first-round grade on him, but they had concerns about him. And those concerns mostly have to do with personality, ability to kind of handle New York, lead a team. Do they want to risk that? I think it would be dicey. So that's the way they view it. I still think you should do it. And then they have the whole Eli thing. Like, become, you know, everyone's going to be clamoring for Josh Rosen.
And that's why I don't think they would do it.
This all plays into it.
This is the Eli apology tour. This is the Eli apology tour. They don't want anything to get in the way of that.
If they love Josh Rosen, though, they would do it. I don't think it's all about Eli. I just think that's a factor. That's not the primary factor. That's a peripheral factor.
Okay. But if they have a first round grade on him, and you can get him for a second, I mean, what am I missing here?
What if they think he just really can't succeed in New York?
Then you get rid of him in 2 years. It's a low risk, high reward type thing with this team.
I agree. We'll see if it happens. I just think in their mind, they view it probably a third they would do it for, but not a second. Because their second is a premium second.
It's basically a first. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like they're getting, if they viewed him as a bottom in the first round guy, Josh Rosen, it's not like it's incredible value, right? He didn't change much between this year and last year.
Right.
So it's decent value, but do they really want to settle for a quarterback they didn't love in the first place?
No.
Is it more so they don't love him, or is it more so the Eli factor?
I think it's more so they don't love him.
Fair.
I do. Like I said, Eli to me is a peripheral factor.
Fair enough. I mean, same last year. Rosen was probably one of the more controversial I guess they were all sort of controversial, especially Baker Mayfield. But Rosen's leadership got challenged more than any other quarterback. It was sort of crazy to me.
Because, look, some of these things are real. Trust me. If you talk to people around the league, these things are real. It's not that he's a bad guy from what I hear. It's just the way he sort of carries himself doesn't come off to people sometimes the right way. And that's something you have to worry about. I mean, as a quarterback, that's a significant thing. At any other position, you wouldn't give a crap, right?
Right.
Who cares about a wide receiver if he comes up the wrong way in the huddle? Get out there and run a route. Let's go. You know, you could do your thing, be a wide receiver. Yeah,
you need 10 other guys to believe in you.
The guy in the huddle and lead a team, it's a different story.
Fair.
Enough with the quarterbacks, okay? Because you're giving me a headache with all this. All right? Defensive players.
What's your blood pressure at right now?
It's too high.
It's getting high. I'm just waiting for you to tell me that a contract extension for Eli Manning is on the table, and I'm just going to bash this computer over my head.
let's get back to the positivity part of this podcast. I don't think
let's do it.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, the defense, because for some reason, everything is the defense's fault, right? We're going to – everything bad that happened in 2018 seems to be the fact that the defense was bad.
The first half of the season didn't happen, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
exactly, exactly. And we're not going to – forget about the fact that they're 1-7 in the first 8 games and average under 20 points a game. Forget all that.
Yeah.
All right. The only thing that matters is the final 8 games. So this is a really good defensive draft, obviously.
Yes.
My favorite player outside of the big three of Bosa, Allen, and Williams is Ed Oliver. Please tell me he's a serious option at 6.
Ed Oliver is a serious option at 6. I told you.
Positivity.
There you go.
Positivity.
That's what I like to hear.
He would be. Now, wait. You like those three guys, but let me tell you, there's another guy that I think would be even above Ed Oliver that's in that mix with those three guys.
Devin White. I would love Devin White.
And Dave Gettleman said something today, which I think was especially telling. Someone said, are you worried or do you think that there would be a point where at number 6, all the defensive studs in the draft would be off the board? And he said, no, not worried about that. Meaning that, A, they have more than 2 or 3 guys that they think are defensive studs, and B, that it's most likely going to come down to which defensive player that they love is there on the board. Now, if Josh Allen was there, you would see them sprint to the podium. It's possible that they have Josh Allen as their top player on the board. That's how much I think they like him.
Really?
But it's definitely possible.
I don't think he gets past the Jets at 3, but...
Well, let's say this. Of the three big three, right, of Allen, Bosa, and Williams, which one is most likely to fall to 6?
Allen, Bosa, or Williams? I asked a lot of people around the league about that, and everyone told me none. They pretty much told me none.
And that's my fear with Kyler going number 1, is that Devin White goes to the Bucs, and we're left with Montez Sweat.
Yeah, Montez Sweat, there's concerns about him around the league a little bit.
In what regard? His health?
Between health and he has some background stuff. Remember, he did get kicked out of Michigan State at the beginning. So for teams to invest in him that high in the draft, I think it might not happen. He might end up dropping a little further than I think people realize.
So if you were to create the most probable pick at number 6, right? Who would you rank 1, 2, and 3?
You're gonna have to wait.
Oh, come on.
I'm writing a story. I will not rank 1, 2, and 3. I'll give you my one guy right now, but I am actually writing a story. After this podcast, I gotta start writing it I think it's gonna run Monday next week. That is the whole point of the story, so I can't give away the whole story.
You can tease it.
But yeah, I will say, and I'm going to assume that Devin White. I'm going to say Devin White. That's what I'm going to say for that.
And I'd be happy with
it. I'm going to say he'd be the most likely, because I think there's a good chance that, we think it's Bosa, Williams, Allen, Devin White, right?
Yep.
Those 4, and then Murray as the top 5. I think there's a good chance that somebody sneaky gets in there, maybe Ed Oliver in that top 4, right? Number 4 being the Raiders. He sneaks in there, and then you're left with the leftovers there, which I think most likely would be Devin White.
And listen, if a guy like Devin White falls into your lap, you got to jump for joy.
I think there's a good chance that happens. Somebody told me they think he's the best linebacker that they looked at in years.
Wow.
Patrick Willis? Yeah. Reminds you of him?
I think he's more rangier sideline to sideline than Patrick Willis a little bit.
He's
more.
Got a little more speed.
Don't get me wrong, Patrick Willis is awesome. He can go rangy sideline to sideline, but I just think that Devin White is just a more athletic version, to be honest with you.
Was he touched by the hand of God?
Maybe. I don't know. But Gettleman did say the 6 range was around the gold jacket range, right? Somewhere around there. So
yeah.
He might be a gold jacket guy, so to speak.
I gave the air quotes.
On that. Like people could see me,
right.
On
this
podcast.
Do the Giants leave this draft without a right tackle?
The Giants will draft a right tackle. Whether or not it's the starter or a younger guy in the middle rounds, I don't know. I think that'll depend on how the board plays out.
Okay.
But the Giants will draft an offensive tackle in this draft within the first 4 rounds.
Wide receiver.
Middle rounds wide receiver. Dave Gettleman did say when he was asked today the positions he thought were the best positions in the draft, the first one he said was wides, and that's wide receivers, meaning that not that it's because it's not that good at the top.
Right.
Like,
right.
I think there might be, when all said and done, only one first-round wide receiver, and that being Hollywood Henderson. Did I get his name right?
Hollywood Brown.
Hollywood Brown.
I mean, yeah, Hollywood Henderson's the old Cowboy guy, right?
Darnell Henderson's the Memphis running back.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew when I said that was not the right thing. Hollywood Brown, yes, the little Oklahoma guy.
Yeah.
He might be the only first round wide receiver, but there will then be a huge run on wide receivers early in the second round. And this is deep from the first to fourth rounds, fifth round even, in quality wide receivers. So I don't think you need to take one up high. So 6 and 17, don't see it. Don't see it at all.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
37 maybe, but even then, probably, you know, third, fourth round. I think you can get a quality wide receiver in their mind, and that's the likelihood of where the sort of the sweet spot for the wide receivers.
Yeah, they could also trade up, right? Move up in the third round, maybe get one in the second round if they want to.
Yeah, the third round is definitely a spot where you can see them move up.
Yeah.
Because they have a long gap between, what is it, 37 and 96?
Yeah.
I think whatever that late third round pick was basically a supplemental pick. So there's a big gap there. Maybe taking one of your later picks and moving up into the middle or top of the third round, I would definitely view as a possibility.
Interesting. Yeah. You want to transition a little bit to schedule real quick?
Yes. And I'm with Jordan on this one. You're out of your mind.
Wait, can I hear, what do you guys want them to do with six? Obviously, Weiss, you want Ed Oliver, huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're not taking a quarterback, Ed Oliver, but Devin White will be I'll be fine with Devin White.
Yeah, I would be fine with Haskins. I could very easily spin myself to liking Drew Locke. Daniel Jones, I could not do at six. If you're
or 17
or 17, correct. If you're eliminating the quarterback position entirely, I would be thrilled with Ed Oliver, thrilled with Devin White. My head would explode if they somehow landed Josh Allen. I'm not very high on Montez Sweat. I know that name was hot like a week ago, I think. Maybe a week and a half ago people were talking about him. I was not sold on him at all. Any of those, the big three you mentioned, Ed Oliver, Devin White.
What if Rashawn Gary enters that conversation?
Not six.
I have a hard time seeing it happen, but yeah.
Yeah.
What about Christian Wilkins, hint, hint?
Six or 17?
Six.
Oh, my God. Come on. Okay. Not at six.
Yeah, not at six.
Well, I forgot to ask you about...
I don't think that's a likelihood, but I wouldn't completely rule it out either if those top five guys are gone.
Well, what about Dwayne Haskins? What happened? Because he seems to be the guy that, A, loves the Giants, B, loves Eli Manning, will sit behind him. And from the area, like, what happened with the Dwayne Haskins love? Why is that died down?
Nothing happened. I think what happens is you sort of catch up to what people around the league are thinking about guys, right? You know, I'm not sitting here asking draft questions to guys in January and February very often. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I started, like, two, three weeks ago of asking people, you know, sources and stuff. And, you know, even some of these guys, like, they're not, you know, they're not in tune with every prospect right away. So it's a process that takes a little while for the information to get out. And people in the league just aren't as high on Dwayne Haskins as, you know, the naked eye told everybody. And I think that's reality. And one of the reasons, maybe the main reason that I heard, and this really isn't his fault, is that...
Inexperience?
Not that, the one-year starter thing is a problem for people, especially because he's playing at Ohio State with Ryan Day was his coach and offense schemes. And people, I'm telling you, rave about Ryan Day. Like, the NFL people love their offense. They think it's so well-run that a lot of these throws were simple, easy throws. And Dwayne Haskins didn't have to make those tough throws consistently. And when he was under pressure, he wasn't great. And so that kind of has counted against him in this process, from what I can tell. The fact that they have such good coaching that it works against him. It doesn't work against Daniel Jones somehow.
Right.
But it's working against Dwayne Haskins in this case.
Yeah, that's because Cutcliffe is assistant GM.
Mike Francesa and David Cutcliffe are running the Giants.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Hand in hand in the war room.
My guy Evan's still over there. That's his conspiracy theory.
Yep.
Funny.
Yeah.
Funny dude.
Funny guy. yeah, we had him on a few weeks ago. All right, schedule? Weiss?
Schedule.
Weiss.
I'm down.
Weiss, 5-11.
Last night you told me I was out of my mind.
I said you were on drugs. Yes.
Wait, what did you have?
Okay. I may make one or two tweaks, but I'll stick to my original prediction because I'm bold
like
that.
You're
going
to be at like 10, aren't you?
No. Let me throw Weiss under the bus first before I make my prediction. Sorry, Weiss. Weiss had them going 10-6 last year.
Listen. Odell Beckham, Saquon Barkley are good for 6 wins. Okay, I mean, I thought four more.
So last year I had them starting 1-6, finishing 7-9. A little off there. Second half not as great, but I think that their floor this year is 6-10. I think their ceiling is really just 8-8, sort of a small window. But I really, really do think that their strategy going into this year is just going to be run the fuck out of the ball behind a revamped offensive line. Saquon Barkley, who is proven to be the best running back in the league, make the defense do the most minimal work. Just ground and pound all day. Make sure Eli doesn't have to make any of these tough throws. And against some of these teams, I really do think they're going to be grinding out these close wins. And I think that, I mean, listen, you look at their schedule. Dallas, okay, we know Dallas's defense is great. Probably not going to win one or both, but divisional games get wonky. You never know. I have them going 0-2. The Redskins are terrible. They don't have a quarterback. Poorly run. Mm-hmm. I have them sweeping the Skins. The Dolphins are going to be starting Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, they get to play the Jets and the Bills, neither of whom really scare me. Right now
they'd be underdog in both of those games because the Bills game they're both on the road, right?
The Bills are at home.
Bills are at home.
Okay. They would be favored against the Bills. They would be underdogs against the Jets.
That's fine. I think it's going to be like maybe a point or two. I mean, I'm curious how Vegas adjusts for home field advantage for two teams playing in the same stadium. Because normally it's 3 points, but if the Giants are basically in the same stadium, different crowd, who knows?
I think right now they would be about 3-point underdogs to the Jets.
Got it.
A lot can change in the time, but I think right now that would be about the time.
And then you look at like Detroit and Minnesota, like both like decent to good teams, but very hot and cold. Like, I don't know, it wouldn't shock me if they stole one of those games. Yeah, they'd be underdogs, but I don't think it's out of the question here. And I mean, a lot of people on Twitter are saying, oh, they're going to go 4-12. Weiss thinks they're only going to win 5 games. But like, just looking at their schedule, I see like 4 freebies right off the bat, and that's both Washington games, the Dolphins game, and the Cardinals game.
I don't know if any game is a freebie for them.
I'm embellishing a little bit.
If you're in a Redskins perspective, I mean, they're talent-wise, they're probably almost equivalent to the Giants.
And they are.
But the Giants don't have a quarterback either if you're a Redskins fan.
Yeah.
So
yep.
I would say probably a split there. I mean, I had them at, I think, 6.
6-10.
I wouldn't be surprised. I was, like, waffling or getting to 7.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if you told me they went 8-8, I wouldn't be, you know, completely floored, but I think they're more in like the 6-7 game range, which isn't like we're not talking about a huge difference here.
Right, exactly. One of the most underrated aspects of their schedule is the fact that pretty much all of their road games are on the East Coast. I think the farthest they travel is Detroit and Chicago. They don't have any West Coast games. They don't have to go to London. The travel schedule is going to be pretty easy.
That's going to be for like every East team though this year. Because
yeah,
the
that's
East
fair.
Are playing the East. The AFC East are playing East. The East.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But just in a vacuum with the Giants, like not a tough road schedule. They got
it's a doable schedule.
Right.
The problem is, I mean, what are you really trying to do if your ceiling is like 8-8, 9-7?
Well, that's the problem, right? Like their
roster. With a 38-year-old quarterback, it's one thing if you're doing. If you're the Jets and you 8-8, 9-7, you're raising your pom poms. You going, that's great.
Exactly.
That exactly. You know, we made progress.
Exactly.
We're heading in the right direction.
Exactly, and that's my whole problem. If this roster is going to be talented enough to maybe win 7 or 8 games, you're in no man's land with no future plan at quarterback. I think this is like. My optimism for the schedule leads to worst case scenario next year for the New York Giants.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. So you're right. That's no man's land because then you still have to get that quarterback. And until you're really good, until that quarterback's up and running, you got at least 2 years till he's really hitting his stride.
Exactly.
You know, so you're just waffling in no man's land for a while.
Pretty much. And that's my biggest fear. No man's land. Been in quarterback hell. Now we're in no man's land.
Let's create the optimal situation then. What's the real hope? Like where are the Giants? What can they do where you're feeling really good about this organization after this year?
Fire Dave Gettleman.
In my opinion, it would be draft a quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Maybe have him come in and play at some point this season, even if it's not a good season. Show progress, you know, build up with some young players, and then get back at it next year. With a young quarterback who's now in his second year, who you hope can become a significant quarterback next year, and you're adding all this young talent around him.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I got no problems with that.
I think you go get Josh Rosen, and then you got about 10, 11 other picks, depending what you give up for Rosen, to essentially rebuild your roster. And to me, they could legitimately be contending next year with Josh Rosen playing quarterback and be very flexible with the cap if they play this right. But it just seems as though they don't.
Even cheaper than a rookie quarterback, Josh. Right.
Yeah.
If you happen to hit on that.
And if it doesn't work.
A third rounder for Josh Rosen and then have him actually be pretty good and then you build your team around that with a ton of money next year, that's the Giants' optimal situation, in my opinion. That,
right there, because you got 6-17. Let's say they give up 37 for him. You got 6-17, and then you got 10 other picks to essentially maneuver around and get other players. I mean, what more could you ask for? Then you go into next offseason with a whole bunch of cap flexibility, and you're essentially building around Josh Rosen and Saquon Barkley.
He obviously, you're banking on him being that guy then. And you never know.
I mean,
I said, if it doesn't go right, if it goes wrong, then so you get a quarterback next year, not the end of the world, right?
Right, exactly. You only give up a second round pick for him.
I will say this though. When we were doing the schedule last year, one of the things that I did harp on a lot is the fact that injuries are going to happen, and at this point in time, the Giants have next to no depth at any position. Yeah. All it takes is Janoris Jenkins pulling a hammy, Hernandez or Zeitler going down when someone rolls up on their ankle, and my prediction goes right out the window. I mean, you need optimal conditions for this team to win 7 or 8 games.
Another thing that I'm hearing is that, well, let's wait until after the draft. It's like, what kind of expectations do you have for these guys that are going to be in their first year? Let's say they take a pass rusher. Pass rushers come on slow. It's not like they come out of the gates having 9-10 sacks a season. I mean, that rarely happens. They come on slow. So this notion to wait until after the draft, no. I mean, this is a 5-win team to me. Maybe 6, but they're not good. Their quarterback is old. What are they going to do? Run the ball 800 times and give the ball to Barkley 200
times? That's exactly what their plan is.
This is the big thing here. They obviously think way differently. At first, I thought they were just saying it because they needed to say it publicly. I'm talking about like a year or two ago.
Yeah.
You know, when Eli was saying he was playing poorly early in the year, and they kind of were under the realization that it was over and they had to move on. Then all of a sudden, they got sold again. And they really believe it. Like, Gettleman, unprompted today, said, we went into last year thinking that Eli had plenty left, and he proved it. Right? And like, you know, they're going out of their way. Oh, that narrative's a crock. Like, they're legitimately sold that he's going to play better this year and that this offense is going to be better without Odell, being that they could spread the ball around. Like, that's this organization's belief right now.
I'm at a
loss. That's the scary part. That's the scary part. These are the decision makers. And this is what they believe.
We could disagree with it. That's their belief, though. I mean, that's reality.
But then,
I guess we'll see. We'll see if they're right again. But I mean, it's just hard to, you know, it's like the banging your head against the wall kind of thing. Are we going? Are we really back to doing this again this year for the third year in a row?
Yes,
and it is.
We are.
And you guys,
and we'll
guys
see. Maybe we're all wrong. Maybe we're all wrong.
I want to be so wrong. I want to be the most wrong. I want good football.
Here's the thing. They'll go 7-9. They'll tell you you're wrong, and they'll give Eli a contract extension next year. I'm serious.
They'll tell you, they say, look, we made progress. We won 5 games the previous year.
They go 8-8. If they go 8-8, would it surprise you if they don't give Eli Manning a contract extension? And I'm not talking about 1 year. I'm talking about 2 years. Seriously, would you be shocked?
If they go 8-8, there's a chance he's back, yes, for sure.
Thank you very much.
And he plays decent, obviously. Yes, if he plays decent, yeah, there's a chance he's back. Especially
20 touchdowns.
But that's only if there's not a young quarterback that they're ready to anoint and put
right
in there.
Right, exactly.
Like, if that young quarterback is there and they drafted him and they spent first-round capital on him and Eli's pedestrian this year, you know, they're not going to roll him back again and have the young guy just sit there and wait while he lingers in mediocrity. Like, that even for them, I don't think that's the route that they would go.
Let's hope.
I looked it up, by the way. I picked 8-8 last year, so I was too optimistic. So anyone out there who keeps telling me I'm a hater, you know, I actually gave them 3 too many wins last year.
That's my take too. People bash me for being too negative all the time. Hey, I'm picking them to win 7-8 games.
I'll tell you a funny story. Our Arizona Cardinals writer last year picked 6-10. Like, first of all, nobody likes doing these things. It's a complete crapshoot.
Yeah.
And then the Cardinals at the team meeting, they put his thing, the coaches put his thing up on the projector saying, look,
oh my God,
they think we're going to stink. So he walks into the locker room, right? And the guys are all over him. They're like, you think we're going to be terrible, blah, blah, blah. And now you look back on it, and they actually went, 4-12?
Yeah.
So he picked them to be 6-10. He actually was being generous. They got in his case.
Oh, my God. Dude, if that was me, I walk into the locker room next season doing the Conor McGregor strut, just like walking in with all the swagger in the world. Oh,
or when you know, or the opposite is if you know that they put your thing up and everyone's getting on your case, you like walk in and what's that gift where you just like Homer Simpson just goes back and falls in the tree or something. He's just trying to disappear.
Well, you have them going 6-10, right, Jordan? Right now, like right now, if the season started, they're a 6-10 team.
I picked 6-10. Yeah, right. I mean, I could have been pushed to go 7, but I could have been pushed to go 7-9.
Maybe
by the time the season comes, I'll even get to that optimistic point and push it up a game or so, because that's usually what happens. Is they add a couple guys, you feel good about this. Everybody's rosy and peachy.
People are raving about Sam Beal.
Summer injuries, yeah. And barring a whole bunch of summer injuries, everybody feels good going into the season, right?
Well, this is where I was going. Let's say they go 6-10, right? Yeah. Eli Manning finishes his career below 500. Is that a big Hall of Fame hit?
I think in the end he probably gets in.
I do too. I think regardless,
he's a weird case, right? Because he's like no player who's ever existed.
Yeah.
Statistically, overall, he's going to be exceptionally high in most categories, in part because the game has changed and all modern-day quarterbacks, if you play a lot, you know, his durability has been amazing.
Yeah.
So he's played so many games, and he's in an era where the passing is way up. So statistically, he's in the top 10 of all these categories. But his career, if you split it up, regular season-wise, he's nowhere near Hall of Famer, right, realistically. If it was just regular season, he's never been an all-pro, meaning he's never been the best at his position. He wouldn't. But he has this other side, which is the playoffs, the two Super Bowl MVPs, which is completely Hall of Fame worthy stuff right there. So you put it together, I think in the end it'll win out. And look, the first time Hall of Famers is hard. Michael Strahan didn't make the Hall of Fame in his first try. Think about how stupid that is.
Yeah.
So whether a guy if a guy makes a Hall of Fame in his first try or not, really isn't, doesn't mean much anyway.
Yeah.
But he'll probably take a little while to get in. He'll need the right year with the right guys around him. But he'll get in because he has that Hall of Fame postseason career. And that's a pretty big thing.
Yeah.
So in the end, even if he has a losing record in the regular season, maybe it'll take him a couple extra years to get in. But ultimately, he's going to get in because he's done things that really are unheard of.
Yeah.
And there's some things on his resume that are Hall of Fame worthy.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's the Iron Man and the two rings that push him over the edge.
Yeah, I mean, even the doing it against the Patriots both times and the Patriots, even each year they keep winning, becomes even more impressive.
Exactly, yeah.
He did it against the Patriots when the Patriots had their best team.
Yep.
They were the 17-0 Patriots.
Yeah.
No, I think he gets in, but finishing below 500, that might delay
it. Why did I say 17-0?
But finishing below 500.
Like I could have said 16 or I could have said 18.
18,
17-0.
Yeah. One funny story, and Wise, I didn't tell you about this either. So Islanders in the playoffs swept the Penguins. I was at the bar watching, I guess, two nights ago at this point. And there's a bunch of people from Twitter there. A couple people said hello to me. And then I'm in the bathroom line in between periods, totally just like minding my business on my phone, unexpecting anyone to come up and talk to me. Out of the blue, this guy just walks right up to me and goes, "Hey, is Daniel Jones in this bathroom line?" And I was so caught off guard, I just turned to him and with a deadpan face, I go, "I certainly fucking hope not." And he just walked away. Totally bizarre. But I don't know what I would do if Daniel
Jones... Wait, why Daniel... Where'd that come from?
Because he knows I hate Daniel Jones. I've probably tweeted about it a million times, and this guy was like, "Oh, that's Ethan. Let me go... make a joke about Daniel Jones." I was just so caught off guard.
Look at you, Mr. Famous, getting noticed in public restrooms.
He is a local celebrity, I'm telling you.
Hardly.
Wow,
hardly.
Look at that. I'm impressed.
At very select Islanders bars in New York City.
I got to get to your level here.
Yeah, well, you should come to the draft party. You bring the laptop. They'll have Wi-Fi. You get on there. You do your thing.
I actually, anonymity is good. I like the fact that nobody bothers me in public is actually a good thing.
I'm shocked. Well, I thought more people. I mean, listen, you're on TV. You got your real picture on your Twitter and everywhere.
It's still pretty rare, which is nice. I got to say, I prefer that. You know, when I'm out with like my daughter or my
definitely.
Wife, that I don't have people, you know, noticing me and harassing me possibly.
Jordan, you picked them to go 6-10, you asshole.
Well, I'll tell you something, Ethan. I am the second most popular Maryland Terp alum that you know. The first is Jordan.
Yeah,
He is a Maryland alum. Maryland alum.
Right above his face right now. You got the plaque. Basketball.
There you go.
Above my face, like people can't see it. This is a piece of the Coldfield House floor.
Wow.
The old Maryland basketball arena. Like when I was there, Coldfield House existed. When Weiss was there, he did not exist because he's young and I'm old.
Yeah.
Comcast. It was a Comcast center. That's what I love.
The Comcast didn't even exist. It wasn't even being built when I was there.
Yeah. All right. We're running on close to an hour. Anybody have anything else left to discuss before we let Jordan go and get back to his writing?
No. Jordan, you are awesome. And I just want to say that anything you put out about anything, whether it's a prospect, the Giants draft, the free agent, or when the NFL calendar year starts, I totally believe everything you say, no matter what anyone says. And hopefully you catch my drift.
I got you. I appreciate it. Look, we just all try and, you know, I'm just out here to do my thing and, you know, not – I'm not worried about what other people think or, you know, do. I'm just trying to make a living, support my family, and go home happy, you know?
No beat writers were shoved in the making of this podcast.
I thought for sure I was going to get some other questions like that around there, but that's fine with me.
Well, maybe when we get you on the next time, now that we're more comfortable with you, maybe we'll throw some more jabs at you the next time.
All right. I can take them. Don't worry about it. I promise you.
All right. Sounds good. Jordan, thank you for coming on. Everyone go follow him on Twitter if you're not already, at Jordan Ronan.
And his podcast. I love his podcast.
And, what's the – give
Breaking Big Blue.
Breaking Big Blue, iTunes and Google Play?
iTunes, Google Play, ESPN app.
And the ESPN
everything.
App.
I work there. ESPN, ESPN.com. ESPN Radio. Yeah. I need to plug it. This is my moneymaker.
Well, one more thing. listen. There's five people I love: my wife, my mom, my dad, and then Stephen A. Smith. How to get Stephen A. Smith on your podcast? I mean, he's close by.
Not a bad idea. He is a Giant fan, right?
He's everybody's fan.
Yeah. Well.
You fun.
You know what? It's not a bad idea. I'll start working on it. For sure.
There we go. All right. As I got the siren finally in the background, that's what happens when you live close to a hospital. All right, Jordan, why don't you
sign
us?
That means wrap it up.
Jordan, why don't you sign us off with a very exaggerated pause in between ES and PN?
Am I really doing this? They're putting me on the spot?
Yeah, I am.
All right. ES. PN.
There it is. All right. Jordan, thank you. This will be out tomorrow, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, buddy.
You got it, guys. Anytime.